Hello. Before we start this week, a brief announcement. Both Laura and I have been deeply affected by Monday's terror attacks on Manchester, and while normally this podcast would not be the ideal place to put those reactions, the attack feels personal to pop fans. The people attending the Ariana Grande concert were primarily young, female and queer, pop's core demographic. The person they had gone to see perform is also young and female, and while it's not good to dwell too heavily on these facts, unless it looks rather like apportioning an element of blame to the entirely innocent victims of an atrocious act, it's fair to say that as far as Unbreak My Chart is concerned, we want to stand with our people.
So, in solidarity with those pop fans who attended the concert, those who did not return home, those still recovering physically and emotionally, and those with life-altering injuries, this podcast will be a celebration of fandom. We will be seeking to enthuse, to gush, to rhapsodise over the songs under discussion this week, not being snarky about anything, because that's exactly what they were doing and what they should have been doing on Monday.
Unbreak My Chart, the podcast that tapes the top 10 and talks about it at school the next day. I'm Fraser McAlpine.
I'm Laura Snapes.
So regular listeners of Unbreak My Chart know that we normally have a bit of a feature before or after the actual top 10. This week we're just going to talk about pop-related, capital G, capital T, good things. Laura, you have the first good thing. Hit me up.
The first thing that I remember making me laugh at the start of this terrible week was when I came across a song called Peekaboo by the rapper Lil Yachty. And I listened to it and I was quite taken aback by some of the words. And, you know, as I know of you, Fraser, and now indentured Unbreak My Chart listeners will also know, you really enjoy anatomical incorrectness and attempts at sexiness that are profoundly unsexy in rap songs. I think that's fair to say.
No, completely. This is one of my favourite things in the whole world.
So I think this song was written especially for you. So let's hear a little bit of it. So that was Peekaboo by Lil Yachty, and for anybody who didn't catch it, and I apologise because we do really try to keep things savoury on here, he sings of presumably an Asian lady friend who he refers to in quite noxious terms, she blow my dick like a cello.
So I suppose it's what you might call a bow job.
But so even more delightful than how horrible the lyric is Yachty's explanation for the lyric. It was just a big mistake. In this lyric, he's for some reason referencing the character Squidward from SpongeBob SquarePants. I don't know if you're familiar with this duh figure. He plays an instrument which I think looks a lot like an oboe, having looked at various pictures of him today. And on Genius.com, the website where artists and fans can annotate lyrics, Yachty blames his A&R person for not telling him that a cello is in fact not a woodwind instrument. He wrote, "Nobody ever pulled up a pick and said, hey man, I don't know if you know what this is, but this ain't that. I effed up. I thought Squidward played the cello. He don't. That's a flute. I effed up. But it do sound good. I'm not sure if it does."
It's not a flute. It's definitely not a flute.
It's not a flute.
The flute goes sideways. What Squidward is playing could either be an oboe or more likely a clarinet. But it's not. It's a black instrument that goes vertically in and out of a mouth in a way that looks a bit like a willy. That's why he made that comparison. That's why the line is in there. And he can't. He's had two goes at naming that instrument and he can't get it right. And that's his only job, is to think of words that work as sexual metaphors. And he messed it up on a colossal level.
I love this. I think there's something really pure about it. I think everybody has, like, one of those words that they've hung on to for a really, really long time and, like, in their early 20s only found out that the way they have been using this word their whole life is completely incorrect. I don't think I've ever mistaken any kind of woodwind instruments for string instruments, so it's quite possible that I have. But I remember until I was, like, about 21 or 22, I thought the word hirsute meant intelligent, when in fact it actually means hairy, so I've been using that wrong for a really long time. But now I only like to use the word hirsute if I am referring to somebody who is both hairy and intelligent, just because I think it's got really got those connotations to it.
This is an abject lesson for anybody that would like to be a music writer. I once had a piece of text in from an aspiring writer who referred to the Foo Fighters as playing selections from their eponymous album, Wasting Light. Now, if you know anything about writing or words, eponymous means named after. In the context of music writing, it means named after the band. So the album The Band by The Band is eponymous. The album Wasting Light, unless the band is called Wasting Light, but the album Wasting Light by the Foo Fighters can't be eponymous. But because it's a music writer word, people just throw it in. And I don't think, I've no idea under what context he thought he was using it, what he thought it meant. I mean, let me know, because it was their seventh album. It's not even Sophomore. It's just... But yeah, don't, just honestly, avoid those words like the play, because they're not only pretentious, but they're used wrongly a lot.
That's brilliant. It's just like a little bit of like music writer parsley as a garnish.
See, I'm doing it like the big boys do it. No, I'm afraid you're not. You've put parsley on a trifle. That's not good.
We've had an excellent email that you picked out of the inbox.
Yes, I had an email from Spence. It says, hi, Laura and Fraser. Further to the topic of unlikely guest appearances, because last week we reminded the world that Mel B and Missy Elliott had once appeared on a song together.
I actually don't know how anybody could have forgotten that. Sorry, just to jump in there. That is an amazing song.
Yes, it's an incredible song. And the ending that we was referring to is the bit where it all falls apart. But the rest of it's great. This was always one of my favourite examples, and one that I'd imagine Beyoncé has probably airbrushed from history. Brooding Curry actor Matthew Marsden featuring Destiny's Child on a 1998 chart-storming, brackets, well, it got to number 24, cover of Hall & Oates' She's Gone. Let's have a listen to that. They could never be what she was to me. She's gone, gone, oh, I, oh, I. We got a line out of faces. She's gone, oh, I, oh, I. I'll pay the devil to repent. She's gone, gone, oh, I. Continues, I kind of think Mr. Marsden is probably still dining out on the kudos of this collaboration, even if everyone else involved has long forgotten about it. Yeah, he's basically going to be like the Little Britain character that claims to know Molly Sugden. He'll have a t-shirt made of himself standing next to Destiny's Child or amid Destiny's Child while they were singing She's Gone. Maybe he'll have made Beyonce's head a little bit bigger than it would be in real life, or done a big red circle all the way around Beyonce's head, or a big red circle around his and Beyonce's faces, just to really hammer home the fact that not only has he met Beyonce, he has sung with Beyonce on a single that was released and made commercially available for people to buy.
I bet there must be so many more great ones like this. I bet, like, do you remember Adam Rickett?
Yes, I do.
He must have done something like this. And also, it does actually remind me of, I think, the first single that I ever bought with my own money, which was, do you recall Tatiana Ali's Boy, You Knock Me Out?
Yes, yes. Yes, I was with it. I can even remember some of the rap, because he sings, because she's all grown up, not Ashley.
Yeah.
Yes, I do remember that very well. You bought that.
Yes, and I also repurchased, it was the first single I ever bought, and I have also since repurchased it on iTunes, because I think it is an underrated 90s banger.
I may even, just to really square that circle, I think I interviewed Tatiana Ali when she released it for Top of the Pops.
Amazing.
Will Smith was not in the studio. I have a feeling that the Top of the Pops performance, and I may be wrong about this, was her in the studio with a video of Will Smith on the screen behind her around, and I interviewed her.
I'm sure that it was, because I remember being really excited that the song was going to be on Top of the Pops and then feeling immensely shortchanged as a 9-year-old. I think it came out in 1998, when Will Smith did not actually turn up. But yeah, what a song. Speaking of incredible songs, there is a new/old Kylie Rae Jepsen song that came out this week, which usually we would do in the new releases section, but it's so golden it's getting its own spot up here. It's called Cut to the Feeling. It is one of the reported 250 songs that she apparently wrote for her 2015 album Emotion, but it's on the soundtrack to a kids' film called Leap, which I think is about dancing, and it sounds like this.
Oh, yeah.
Now, there, I mean, there's obviously no connection between her releasing that song this week of all weeks. But, I mean, what a week for a song about the kind of transcendent sensations that pop can offer. The thing that I love about Kylie Rae Jepsen, when you listen to the songs on emotion, all she does is want things really hard. She just wants to feel these kind of like immense euphoric highs. She's not really interested in romance or settling down or, you know, the person that she's supposedly singing to is the object of her affection. Everything is just incessant, needless wanting. Yeah, she wants these highs and I think she supplies them in equal measure. I think this song is great. There's, you know, considering... I think there's a lot of people that are saying that, you know, like maybe Emotion would have been a bigger album if she had let other people do the A&Ring on it. Like if she had 250 songs and there are songs as good as this in the offcuts of the offcuts pile, bearing in mind that she released a B-sides collection last year, imagine what bounty is in that trove. I think there's a bit of, you can hear a bit of Lucky Star in here, some I Want to Dance with Somebody, a bit of Heaven is a Place on Earth, there's bits of Robin and Iconopop. I think it is brilliant.
Yeah, I completely agree. And as wonderful as the song as it is, and I went straight to the Robin and early Madonna thing as well. Anything that reminds anyone of Robin that isn't a cover version of one of her songs done by a plaintively voiced man is a wonderful thing, you know, and will deserves to be praised to the sky. One note of slight disquiet, and this is just tribalism on my part. I was ever so slightly crestfallen to note that Kylie Rae Jepsen got such a wonderful reaction by releasing this song this week. And I think that Bad Liar, my song of the week from last week that I gushed about, does everything that people claim of this song and is every bit as exciting and new and pop glorious as this song is. And actually, as is often the case with these things, when you're really sold on a song and everyone gets really excited the following week about a different song for the same reasons that you like your song, just makes you more fiercely protective of the song that you've got. So it made me like Bad Liar even more and listen to it even more, if that was such a thing were possible. But it was like, this Kylie Rae Jepsen song is perfectly nice. However, Bad Liar needs my attention right now as it only got to number 35 in the chart so far. And I hope it goes a lot higher.
Yeah, I'm sure it will climb. I think, you know, somebody like Kylie Rae Jepsen inevitably gets so much chatter online because, you know, all 600 of her fans have a Twitter account that they like to use, whereas Selena Gomez is a very real billion-selling pop star. So I think the discrepancy will kind of err in your favour. I'll be curious to see if that Kylie Rae Jepsen song gets in the top 40. I mean, I guess it won't, because I imagine that it hasn't been given a great deal of a push. They've probably, like, stuck it on YouTube and that's about it. But I wonder if they're going to, you know, play it on the radio. They should.
I genuinely was excited to have heard Bad Liar in a shop in the week.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really like, it's catching on! I felt really thrilled. But we'll see. We've got a two-horse race going now. We'll see who wins.
Have you heard about... So Peter Robinson from Pop Justice is running this competition. I think he started at the beginning of the year. And it's for, like, the first song that makes him, like, leap out of his seat and go, oh, my God. He said, because there hasn't been one in very long, he's going to give the creator of this song £100, and I think he's got certain rules, such as it cannot be like a faceless Scandi banger about, you know, triumphing against the odds. But I think he said that Kylie Rae Jepsen almost got it this week. But while we are talking about summer bangers and big pop highs of the week, I am going to be a big knob and say that this week I went to the office of one of the big major labels and I heard the actual song of the summer. I am not allowed to say anything about it other than that A, it's incredible. B, it has the best video I have seen in years. C, I literally heard it once 4 days ago and it has been stuck in my head ever since. And D, I think it is out in July, so we will be able to discuss it in a mere month. I would bet £100 of my own money on this getting Peter Robinson's £100 if we just want to start a domino effect of bets.
While we're talking about good pop things of the week, Radio 1's Big Weekend has been happening this weekend. And they've got, for a publicly funded state broadcaster to put on an event that is so broad in its scope, to have pulled in acts, you know, from Katy Perry to Lorde to Kasabian to Biffy Clyro and Christine and the Queens, and BBC introducing acts, so they're everybody from unheard of people, you know, where Ed Sheeran was 6 or 7 years ago, and released full footage of live performances of all of those acts across the BBC website on the iPlayer. You know, so that if you want to see what the new Lorde material is like, some of it is on the iPlayer right now, ready to be watched. The new Katy Perry stuff, you know, it's just as a great thing, a great resource to have for a pop-loving nation. The BBC iPlayer is currently awash with really top-quality pop music. So I think that's just something that's worth celebrating, really. And it's also, and I've had some professional dealings with Radio 1 and Big Weekend, particularly breaking down in tears in front of the Ting Tings happened at the Big Weekend in Kent. But I still think they're a wonderful event. I think that they are, with Glastonbury becoming more pop-centric, they're starting to become interchangeable with Glastonbury to an extent, but I think they're a lot more accessible. They travel around to local areas so people can get to them.
Yeah, I was watching a bit of footage from them earlier, actually. Lord's performance looked amazing. Christine and the Queens was also really good. And there was Nick Grimshaw was up on the main stage and he held like a really, really beautiful minute silence for Manchester. But then after that, I think they had a minute's noise, which I just thought was great. It was very touching to watch. A couple more brilliant pop things from the week. For anybody who remembers Smash Hits Letters page from the 80s, which I do not because I was not born then, but I have read about it. If you wrote into the Smash Hits Letters page in the 80s, if you were the letter of the week, the letters page was responded to by a mysterious, shadowy, kind of Woodhouse-ian figure, I think, called Black Type. And if you were letter of the week, you would get a special Black Type tea towel. I think, you know, these were just like a competition winner thing at the time in the same way that like a Blue Peter badge was. But an enterprising individual who has requested not to be named has made replicas of them, and all funds will be going to the Royal Manchester Children's Hospital. You can get one of those from smashhitstowel.tumblr.com, and as ever, we'll pop a link in the show notes. I've ordered one. They look really, really good.
Oh, they're wonderful. And they're covered in Smash Hits style writing. Mm-hmm. That's all we can say. Which, you know, you think you know as people, it's such a commonly handed around house style that you think, oh well, the internet talks in Smash Hits style nowadays, but it really doesn't. There's so much more filigrees and ornate wonder in the way that Smash Hits used to write mm-hmm. as a house style than anything that you know, even some of the best pop writers at the moment would still struggle to match. And that's just written on a tea towel that does some good for Manchester Children's Hospital. So it's always round. It is a wonderful thing.
Fraser, what is your favourite Smash Hitsism?
The thing is, they're all stuck in my head all the time. So, I mean, the whole Crikey O'Reilly, you know, the use of Woodhousian, not expletives, but just excitement is all in there.
I think my favourite is Uncle Disgusting, which I believe is the Smash Hits term for an older... Yeah. Slightly perverted gentleman with nefarious ways.
Oh no, Lord Lucan of Mercury. All of the official titles for pop stars that sounded like they were members of the landed gentry. Mm-hmm. So Fab Macca, Wacky Thumbs Aloft. That's the lexicon that you'd want for pop writing. That's exactly where you go to from where you start. Is how do you describe pop stars, knowing that they are at one and the same time preposterous and also fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I think my favourite of their nicknames is when they nicknamed Brian Ferry Byron Ferrari, which is in my head so much that often when I go to say the words Brian Ferry, it's Byron Ferrari that comes first.
Well, Paul McCartney had to address the fact that he was known as... I mean, that was the equivalent of the Craig David Beau Selector thing, that everybody saw a picture of Paul McCartney had his thumbs up all the time, and he became Sir Fab Macca Wacky Thumbs Aloft. And so he had to... And he played up to it for a bit and was like, no, I am that. That is me. But you'll notice that he doesn't really do so much of the Thumbs Aloft stuff anymore. Mm-hmm. So I think these things have just a quiet and subtle way of undermining people's feeling that they can literally do anything and it will be charming.
I've been watching the Top of the Pops reruns on Friday nights, and Tracy Ullman has been in the charts a lot in 1983. And I forget the name of her single. It's stuck in my head, but I can't remember the words. But
it's either Breakaway or They Don't Know.
They Don't Know. Yeah, They Don't Know About Us. And he's in the video at the end. He's driving a car and he's fully pulling a Fab Whack-a-Macky kind of face while he's at the wheel.
Wasn't Neil Kinnock in the video as well?
Oh, not that I remember, but maybe.
He's in a Tracy Ullman video, I'm sure of it. Guess how old I am, everyone? It's a lot older, lot older than I used to appear.
So, on to this week's top 10, and we're going to break with tradition and mention that this week's number 11 is Ariana Grande's One Last Time, which her fans have been streaming and downloading to show their support, which I think is fandom at its best, really.
Last time. continues to rise, because that puts the people who are most severely affected by the attack at the heart of where they should be, really. They're back in the charts, and it's about their relationship with Ariana Grande, which also is what the benefit concert is about, and it's what, you know, it's the primary discourse that should come out of this, I think, is that, you know, this was a relationship between the fans and a singer, and that's the thing that needs to be nurtured and cherished. So on to the top 10. At number 10 is Sign of the Times by Harry Styles. Just stop your crying, it's a sign of the times. We gotta get away from here. We gotta get away from here. Now this is back to where it was a fortnight ago. It had a bit of a lift when the streams from the album plays, so people were playing the album on Spotify and whatever, lifted it back up the top 10. But it's worth noting, for all that there's some hand-wringing going on about whether Harry's solo career is really getting the rocket lift that it deserves, the album was only just knocked off the top spot after a week by Ed Sheeran. It's at number 2 currently, but it's doing better than other albums by more established artists that were released the same time. So Paul Weller's album and Paramore's album are both further down the top 10, like significantly further down, not just knocked back by Harry Styles. And so is the album by Jay Huss, who's, you know, which is up and coming and exciting new artist. So, you know, in a sense, he's doing all right.
Yeah, I think the lad might make good. His album is also outselling Paul Weller on the official vinyl charts last week, which I thought was interesting. But now I checked again this week and they look really weird. Erasure's World Be Gone is number 1. Skepta's Konnichiwa is a new entry at number 4, presumably because it's just been released on vinyl for the first time. And The Kooks, ambitiously titled Best Of So Far, is at number 7. But back to the top 10 singles. At number 9 is Attention by Charlie Puth.
It's still funny that he sings turd instead of dirt. I think that's worth mentioning every time you hear that song. Also, he has the dubious honour of being one of the most overlooked performers on his own biggest hit single, which is the song See You Again by Wiz Khalifa featuring Charlie Puth. And the more I learn about how that song came to be written, the more I think it's outrageous it has released as Wiz Khalifa featuring Charlie Puth. Bearing in mind that it's the chorus that sells the song. If you said to someone, can you sing me any of See You Again by Wiz Khalifa featuring Charlie Puth, they would sing the chorus. He wrote the chorus before anybody sent it over to Wiz Khalifa. He did the groundwork with his producer DJ Frank E, and it was sent to Wiz Khalifa for the rap bits to be added, which he did do. And it was created specifically for Fast and Furious 7 in the wake of Paul Walker's death. But it's just really interesting that it came out, and the way that the credits were put out were, yeah, this is a Wiz Khalifa song. It happens to feature Charlie Puth. It's like, yeah, on the bit that people want to listen to. Yeah, that's the Charlie Puth bit. At number 8, Swallow by Jason Derulo featuring Nicki Minaj and Ty Dolla $ign. Shimmy, shimmy, yeah, shimmy, yeah, shimmy, yeah. Drink. Swallow, la, la. Drink. Swallow, la, la. Swallow, la, la. Shimmy, shimmy, yeah, shimmy, yeah, shimmy, yeah. Drink. Swallow, la, la. Drink. Swallow, la, la. Now, Laura, the champagne and semen double entendre within this song has reminded me of another really good song, Some Girls by Rachel Stevens, which came out in 2004, and is, for my money, one of the best pop singles of the last 20 years. Because it contains the line, this won't last for long, not forever, and the champagne makes it taste so much better. And there's a song about an aspiring starlet and her muso boyfriend who's desperate to... There's some suggestion as to whether it's a casting couch relationship where he's already established and arrogant and lording it over her, and she has to do stuff for him in order to get on, in order to become famous, or whether they're both struggling. Well, whatever, she's finding it a little bit much, the struggle for fame, and is asked to do certain things that she's not particularly into. And, you know, the assumption is that there is an element of blowjobs to that. And so it does ride that line between champagne and body fluids, which is mentioned in Swallow. It just does it in a far classier way.
You just reminded me, A, how amazing that song is, but B, somewhere deep in my iTunes, I've got an amazing mashup that a friend of a friend made of Rachel Stevens' Some Girls and Atlas by Battles.
Yes.
You would not think of this, but the two things go together amazingly. The Battles element makes it so kind of like squelchy and mutated. I'll try and dig it out.
Do you know why that's a great mashup? Because I've heard it as well. And it's because they both share a common ancestral DNA, which is the Doctor Who theme. They've all got that shuffle beat and that kind of electronic... It's all based on Doctor Who. One of the most influential pieces of electronic music ever made, by the way, the Doctor Who theme.
At number 7 is Shape of You by Ed Sheeran. Something brand new. I'm in love with your body. I'm in love with your body. I'm in love with your body.
And at number 6 is Unforgettable by French Montana featuring Swae Lee.
Number 5 this week is Symphony by Clean Bandit featuring Zara Larsson. I just wanna be part of your symphony.
And at number 4, There's Nothing Holding Me Back by Shawn Mendes. Oh, I've been shaking, I love it when you go crazy. You take all my inhibitions. Baby, there's nothing holding me back. You take me places that tear up my reputation. Manipulate my decisions. Baby, there's nothing holding me back.
This week's number 3 is Strip That Down by Liam Payne featuring Quavo. You know I love it when the music's loud, but come on, strip that down for me, baby. Now there's a lot of people in the crowd, but only you can dance with me. So put your hands on my body and swing that crown for me, baby. You know I love it when the music's loud, but come on, strip that down for me.
We had a good go at this last week, so I think regular Unbreak My Chart listeners will know what we think of this one. But it's interesting to note that Galway Girl may have left the top 10, but Ed Sheeran is back because he co-wrote this song either with or for Liam Payne, and he contributed also. His voice is the one that's doing that strip that down girl bit in the song. That's him. So Ed Sheeran is back.
It hadn't occurred to me until you mentioned it then that Galway Girl is out of the top 10. I mean, if we're talking about pop things to be grateful for this week, what an event. Also, I'm really surprised that it never swapped places with Shape of You. I mean, I know that Galway Girl is a harder listen than Shape of You, but I really thought it was going to ride up the charts like some kind of, you know, obnoxious climber.
That was one of our big early predictions. That made people think that we knew what we were talking about, and now look.
So, obviously, his video didn't propel it back up the charts. I reckon the thing that will propel it to number 1, he'll perform at Glastonbury. He'll have, like, Michael Flatley. Yeah, he'll have the full Riverdance. It will be the most Irish-looking thing in the world, and that is what will propel it to number 1.
We were still getting tweets from people, because we've started adding 10-second clips of songs in the top 10. We started getting tweets from people who said, "Thanks, guys, I hadn't heard Galway Girl up until now, and now I've heard it." Sorry, Stacey. That was, that's an unintended side effect of forcing you to listen to pop music that we have to listen to as well. And number 2 is I'm the One by DJ Khaled featuring Justin Bieber, Quavo, Chance the Rapper, Lil Wayne, Dozy, Beaky, Mick and Titch. I'm the one. I'm the one. We had some tweets immediately after last week's podcast. These were from Janabi the Al Dowd, and they were concerning my comments over the video and the director's chair that is the first shot in the video, which says executive producer Asad Khaled. And he said, "Got to defend boss man DJ Khaled. Asad is his infant son." So when he put up the director's chair and it says executive producer, it was a nod to the fact that he's just had a baby. And I mocked that. So I'm more than happy to apologise for that. I don't think any offence has been caused. I just want to apologise for being wrong, which I entirely was. Janabi does go on to say, it's interesting comparing his selfless love of his son to the elements of self-aggrandisement that come through in his music. I think it's useful to see the I in I'm the One as being related to a wider community of people who manage to achieve success, like Khaled. I think this also comes through in All I Can Do Is Win, which always read as collective celebration through celebration of the individual. Hazel Carby talks about how the I in the blues often stood for a we, a whole community of people, which imbued it with a hidden capacity for protest. And though that's not entirely the same as what is going on in this record, it feels like one way to reconcile Khaled's narcissism and the love for his son and his role as a supporter in hip-hop, which I thought was an absolutely wonderful response and very much worth thinking about, is when someone is saying I on a record in a self-aggrandizing way, do they mean themselves, or are they standing for everybody that's listening to the record who will also be listening to it as an I of their own? And it really made me go back to the record and listen to it again. It's still really self-aggrandizing. I don't think it's ever going to quite get over that. And I think the presence of Justin Bieber, a white, blonde-haired, handsome, straight man, won't make that work as well as it perhaps it could. But I think there's something to be said for always just digging around the back of that stuff. So I thank Janabi for those comments, because they really made me think.
Yeah, that's a brilliant letter. Thank you. This week's number one is still Despacito by Luis Fonsi and Daddy Yankee, featuring once more Justin Bieber. Despacito, quiero respirar tu cuello despacito. Deja que te diga cosas al oído para que te acuerdes si no estás conmigo. Despacito, quiero desnudarte a besos despacito. Firmo las paredes de tu laberinto y hacer de tu cuerpo todo un manuscrito. All I can say about this song is that it has replaced Galway Girl as the song of choice for the teenagers in my house. Even the 15-year-old boy in my house, who insists that Justin Bieber is the source of all the world's evil, he likes it. And also, there's a chart stat. People like chart stats. Justin Bieber has now spent more weeks at numbers 1 and 2 together at the same time. He spent 12 weeks at both numbers 1 and 2 with various songs. He's done that more than anyone else has. He's just beaten Ed Sheeran, who had done it a bit as well. Blimey. Well, I am going to withhold my congratulations from Justin Bieber. Have you seen the footage of him performing this song live this week, forgetting every single word of the Spanish and just singing blah, blah, blah through the hook?
It's
extremely tragic. I must try harder.
That's awful. There is literally no plaudit that you can give to Justin Bieber that he won't go out of his way to muck up. Like, you're the most attractive. Oh, we love you, Justin. You're so wonderful. Yeah, well, it turns out that my personality is repulsive. So there. Oh, I'm really disappointed because I like Despacito. I thought Justin Bieber was getting better, but not personally, obviously. Why would you not even have some form of phonetic...
Auto-cue,
thank you. Auto-cue up. And this is after live reports of him where people are like, I've seen him wipe his mouth with a towel while he's supposed to be singing. He's clearly not singing live. So the bits which are on tape in his own gigs are not the bits that he doesn't know the words to. Oh, everything's gone weird now.
So there's tons and tons of really good new releases out this week. We have selected a few of them. First up is Tyrant by Kali Uchis featuring Georgia Smith. Friend of the pod Simran asked us to review this one. Thanks, Simran. Hi. And I think it might be a surreptitious song of the summer if you're in the mood for a slow jam rather than a banger. I really enjoy Georgia Smith's guest vocal. I've not really listened to her that much. I've probably read more about her than I've heard, to my shame. But she really reminds me a lot of Amy Winehouse, and I would say it's probably displaced Unforgettable as my favourite dancehall-inspired single of the moment. Also out this week is I Miss Those Days by Bleachers. Approach December, people always say, why aren't there any more great kind of pop Christmas singles being written? Like, why can't anybody write them anymore? You know, people try and they're never really very good. But this song leads me to believe that Jack Antonoff might be our saving grace in this respect. There is a particular stripe of music that I enjoy, which I would describe as kind of perennially festive. It's not Christmas music, but it's things that sound like Christmas songs, but they're not. And I think this could easily be one of them. I think there's something in the tone of the chimes at the start and that kind of rinky-dink harpsichord sound and the yearning that's in it. I could definitely imagine Jack Antonoff writing a brilliant Christmas song off the back of this.
Yeah, and it's got... I mean, there is always somebody around who is trying to write popper, Phil Spector-type pop music, and Bleachers seem to be the latest in that line that goes back through, you know, Phoenix or Mull Historical Society. And they're always welcome, the proper craftsmen of pop.
One of my favourite new songs that's out this week is called Cigarette, and it is by Marika Hackman, and it sounds like this. You're in the parking lot, I'm in the car's lot, I didn't want to let you in. When did it get so forced? Drunk by the second course. You're never gonna let me win. And I tried to hold my tongue, but you yanked it from my grip. Bathed it in petroleum. Lit a cigarette and gave it a kiss. Are you a fan of Marika Hackman, Fraser?
Yes, I am.
I never really listened to her first album that much. It seemed fine. It was just kind of, you know, slightly maudlin, eerie kind of folk music. But the first single from her new album, was the single is called Boyfriend. The album is called I'm Not Your Man. The single was this amazing, like, bubble grunge, kind of, like, cartoony Britpop banger about emasculating a man by stealing his girlfriend, which I just thought was great. And there's quite a lot, the album is out this week and there's quite a lot of grungy stuff on it, but this song is a bit of an outlier. It is one of the more folky moments, and I think it's got a lovely kind of sly sound to it, but the lyrics of this song are so good. It seems to be about a couple who really, really need to break up, but they're doing everything they can to avoid having the conversation. And she sings, I tried to hold my tongue, but you yanked it from my grip, bathed it in petroleum, lit a cigarette and give it a kiss. I think that's such a good image at the end. Every time she sings it, it kind of takes my breath away a bit.
I love the fact that it sounds like Laura Marling. If Laura Marling was writing songs about things that, like, she lived in the nowadays of things. So the fact that she's mentioning petroleum, even though petroleum is an old way of describing petrol, it still seems like a kind of a bit modern, a bit up to date. But it's got everything of the sepia tone folk music that Laura Marling has as well, and a lot of other artists that sound like that as well.
I think the song is also set in a multi-story car park, which ages it well. But I do like Laura Marling, but I think there's something kind of snakier about the way this song flows, which I think is quite unusual. I really, really recommend this album. It's out Friday. Definitely give it a listen. A new song that I was surprised to enjoy this week, because I don't know that I've ever enjoyed any of this person's work before, was Your Song by Rita Ora. I got a reason, so man, put that record on again. I don't wanna hear sad songs anymore. I only wanna hear love songs. I found my heart up in this place tonight. Don't wanna sing mad songs anymore. Only wanna sing your song. Cause your song's got me feeling like I'm in love, I'm in love, I'm in love. Yeah, you know, your song's got me feeling like I'm. No fear, but I think I'm falling. I'm not proud, but I'm usually the type of girl that would hit and run. Now, I probably wouldn't usually have, like, bothered to look this up and listen to it, but I heard quite a lot of whisperings on Twitter earlier in the week that it was actually quite good. This comes after Rita has spent a few years in pop's wilderness, kind of propping up the Evening Standard's gossip pages rather than doing much in the way of music. And while there's nothing wildly surprising here, I do really enjoy a song that says, I don't want to hear sad sounds anymore, while actually sounding pretty sad, or at least not euphorically happy. There's always something quite kind of relieved and thankful sounding about her vocals, and I like that it wasn't particularly bombastic. I thought it was a good look for her.
Sometimes bombastic is great, but you have to really hit the nail on the head with bombastic to make, you know, like Bonkers by Dizzy Rascal is bombastic, but it's also brilliantly weird and funny and strange and, you know, takes the top of your head off. And if you can't do that, then it just sounds like empty shouting. Mm-hmm. And what's nice about this song is it is a version of the current pop sound, but if anything, it takes what is already quite a relaxed pop noise and makes it even more relaxed and even more laid back, which is kind of great.
Speaking of exciting pop shouting, Fraser, what is your most streamed song this week?
Well, this is exciting pop shouting. My most streamed song this week is the remix of Power by Little Mix that features Stormzy. You got the power. There are two interesting grime guest spots out this week. There's this, and there's the Big Nasty's incredibly foul-mouthed addition to Supercharged by Enter Shikari. And the thing with that, with the Enter Shikari Big Nasty thing, is it does that thing which these team-ups often do, which is it just seems like it's a way for each artist to steal the credibility of their other artist's fan base. So Big Nasty can talk directly to Enter Shikari fans, and Enter Shikari can feel good about that, and vice versa. And they're both quite, you know, aggro performers, whereas Little Mix are out-aggroing Stormzy by a significant degree with Power. They can out-sing him, they can out-strut him, and what's brilliant is that Stormzy has replied in kind by becoming quieter. So it's not that he's risen to the challenge. He's gone, no, fair enough, there's a lot of shouting going on here. I'm just going to back down a little bit. And so what he's rapping about, it's about empowerment, because but the song seems to be largely about riding motorbikes, which is the power of motorbikes and horsepower and stuff. So it's not even particularly a feminist anthem, but Stormzy's added that slight element to it. And so he's made a rap about power, which is germane to the subject of the song a bit, which is, again, unusual for rappers, because normally they're just like, hello, I'm here to do some rapping about me and women and drinking. I do lots of all of those things. And he sort of puts a male perspective to this ferocious noise that the Little Mix are writing. And he raps, one of the first lines he does is, you look him in the eye and say, I know I'm not a guy, but see, there's power in my losses and there's power in my wins. And I was like, that's incredibly profound for what is essentially just a guest verse in a Little Mix album track that's being promoted as a single. So all power, more power to everybody involved, literally more power to everybody involved.
Amazing.
Laura, what's your song of the week?
Well, apart from Carly Rae Jepsen, which we've already talked about, mine is not a new one. This week I've been preparing for the new Lorde album by listening to all of her old material, and I've listened to the EP and the album, but the song that I've really got stuck on is Yellow Flicker Beat, which is the song she wrote for the Hunger Games soundtrack. This is the start of our lens. They used to shout my name. I don't have anything new or profound to add to what's already been said about this song, but I do think it's a point where she kind of transforms from this teenage savant to a kind of an actual pop magician. It makes me want to, even without having seen her do the video, and I know you won't have seen that as an avowed hater of videos, the way that she dances in it, she kind of dances like a human accordion, like she's got like bellows inside her or something, and she's just kind of like inflating and deflating, and it makes me want to do that without even having seen the way that she's doing it. Yeah, I just think it's a great song, and if you cannot bask in favourite old songs this week, when can you? So thank you very much for listening and subscribing to Unbreak My Chart this week of all weeks. You can email us at unbreakmychartpod@gmail.com to tell us about any good things in pop as far as you're concerned. Also, at some point in the next few weeks, we're going to start discussing this year's Songs of the Summer contenders, so please do send us your submissions for those, and the more international, the better.
If you want to listen to any of the songs we've discussed in this week's podcast, we, as always, we put the best ones in a Spotify playlist linked to in the show notes.
And you can find us both on Twitter. I'm at Laura Snapes.
I'm at CSI_popmusic.
And our producer is the wonderful Tay Mawson, and we'll be back next week. Thanks for listening.
Bye.